My first question is In and Out or Five Guys?
Oh, In and Out.
In and Out.
Oh, for
not
sure.
Not even a question.
We're quick.
Yeah, we're Southern California,
no
though.
Doubt.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so In and Out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. On the team.
100%.
It's so funny because I usually get a really strong reaction for, like, in favor of In and Out.
Right.
Sometimes people are really strong on Five Guys. Usually people are just kind of like, oh, I just like Five Guys a little bit more. Orange was the only one who was really. I've talked to, he hasn't been on the podcast, but I've talked to him before, and he has the hottest take of just, it is Five Guys all
really?
The way.
Really?
Oh, so no. Why is In-N-Out?
He's from Pacific Northwest, where it started,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's from,
States.
It's from, yeah.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
I hadn't thought about that.
Right.
Yeah, he did a lot of ministry up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the bonus season of 10 Questions with 10 Pastors. This is 10 Questions with 10 Missionaries. Brought to you by Gateway Seminary. With your host, Tyler Sanders.
Well, I'm here with Mark and Hannah Bustrom, who are church planners and associate cluster leaders for Iberia. They're based in Portugal. Right now, they're based in Southern California because they're working with Gateway Seminary as our professionals in residence. Can you tell me a little bit about what you guys do with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, it's just representing missions to the seminary and connecting with student staff that are interested in missions and how we can connect them and help them in that process.
Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about the work you guys do in Portugal.
Yeah. So, it's mostly church planting. That's a big general word. And so, a lot of it, the day-to-day, is coming alongside local churches to continue to help them now grow in health, but then also look at planting new churches. We're working a field where the church, the local church, does exist. And so it's not necessarily a 0-to-1 type of field.
Hmm.
And so we're coming alongside Baptist-like churches and helping them just take that next step of faith and obedience in what God has called them to
like
do.
Like indigenous, like local churches?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. And of course, that there's just so much that goes into it because, you know, our work is together, but at the same time, there's a lot of different ministry emphases. With Hannah and the kids and all the 15 years we've been there.
Yeah, I mean, the broad idea is church planting, but we do work really closely with the local church. Mm-hmm. I work really closely with the women's ministry that we have at our church, which we've grown to kind of a national women's ministry. Portugal is very resource poor. And so a lot of what we do is just helping the church. Our church is a healthy church and really has a desire to see just things change in the whole country. Portugal is a tiny little country, so they see a lot of opportunity. So we've had the chance to work a lot alongside the church, and especially me with the women, just helping to grow resources and grow opportunities for evangelical women and evangelical churches in Portugal.
Can you give me some, like, the highlight story of, like, how you were saved, how you came to know Christ, how you got called to missions, and then how you ended up in Portugal?
Yeah. Yeah. So you really put a lot in that, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's like a 3-for-1,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. Let's start with getting saved. That's the most important part,
yeah,
right?
Just
faith in Christ.
Start at the beginning.
So, yeah. So I grew up in a Christian home. Me and Hannah actually grew up overseas in Africa, in Kenya. That's where we met when we were 12.
We're both missionary kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've actually lived more years overseas than we have in the U.S.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that makes us, like, bad Americans or something. I don't know. But so I grew up hearing the stories. I grew up as a missionary kid.
Hmm.
And, you know, surprise, surprise, that doesn't save you.
Right.
Right. And so it was a lot of years later, after a lot of rebellion, a lot of going my own way, joined the military, did what I wanted to do. And actually, it wasn't until I was 24 years old that God just got a hold of me.
Hmm.
And I heard the gospel. It was almost like hearing it for the very first time. I heard the gospel one night when we were at church. And I just knew I had to respond. And I knew of my spiritual state because when I looked at my life, even though I knew the stories, even though I'd heard the name Jesus thousands and thousands of times in home growing up, I knew I didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus.
Hmm.
And the reason I knew that something happened when I cried out to the Lord and I said, Lord, I need you to save me. And the response in my heart was to immediately run after the pastor and tell him what had happened and say, I need to be baptized.
Right.
And so it's just this radical conversion of God saving me at 24 years old. I was already married. We had already had our first daughter.
Wow.
I was in my last year of the military.
Yeah.
And God just got a hold of me.
Yeah.
When I heard the gospel and responded.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in a Christian family as well. When I was young, my dad was a pastor of little, you know, churches up in the Pacific Northwest. That's where my parents are from. And so I was saved as a young girl, baptized by my dad at, you know, I think I was 8 or 9 years old. And then we went to the mission field and I spent my, the rest of my, you know, childhood there. It was a wonderful childhood. I have very strong believing parents. So grew in my faith during that time, but I actually came to Cal Baptist for college. And I would say that was the time when my faith really became my own, when I really took the responsibility for my own faith. I had been at boarding school in Kenya.
Sure,
and so, you know, that's a podcast for a different day, but, you know, a different journey. But I would say here at college, just that opportunity to study at a Christian college. At that time, Cal Baptist was small, so it was kind of just a little family. And that was when I really grew in my faith, really assumed my faith as my own. And then we grew up together, but his family had left the field. And so there was a time when we weren't together, but he came back into town and we reconnected and decided to get married. That was when he was in the military. And we were all about going overseas, but we pinky promised that we would never be missionaries.
Like never. Like that was like a marriage pact. We'll never be missionaries.
Yeah. So that was part of the deal when we got married. That was not the direction we were headed. The military was going to take us overseas. We were going to do all these fun things, but it was not going to be in ministry. It was definitely not going to be in mission. So God continued to work on us. He continued to work on Mark's heart specifically during that time. And then when he got out of the military, we very randomly, because we're a West Coast family all the way, ended up in Tennessee.
Which is like a foreign country.
Oh, yeah.
Really? If you've ever been there, right?
I was raised in Mississippi, actually.
Okay,
oh, so you know.
There you
yeah,
go.
I'm from the other country.
You are the other country. You're a foreigner.
Yes. Yeah. So very, very random long story about how that all happened. But that was when he went to university. And through a lot of different things, obviously God really working, we ended up working for the North American Mission Board, running a Christian Women's Job Corps site through the WMU. And that was kind of God's, like, this is the direction you're heading, and it ends overseas. And so he just kind of slowly walked us through a process we didn't really want to walk through, but we loved, actually, the journey once he took us there.
Once he convinced our hearts, I think we were all in.
Yeah.
And and that was, it, we kind of went kicking and screaming for a little bit, and then we realized what God had done in us to prepare us for what he wanted us to do, and being overseas and in cross-cultural ministry. And we just thought, oh man, exactly. This is what God is preparing us for.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool because we loved Europe. I had spent 2 years. Well, we had spent 2 years in Germany when I was in the military. Just fell in love with Europe. And it was just such a difference between Africa and Europe.
Sure.
And we were very attracted to this idea of, like, we could live in community with people. Because, you know, in Africa it was great, but we were always extremely different.
We could never
really assimilate or at least try to assimilate.
Yeah.
And so we just looked at Europe and we looked at Western Europe, and Western Europe was extremely interesting to us because it was a place where the gospel once was, but no longer is.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at these places where all of a sudden they're unreached, completely unreached.
Right.
I mean, Portugal even today is less than 1% evangelical Christian.
Wow.
And so when you think about that, you think, wow, like the gospel needs to get to Portuguese people in this generation and the next. And so we just started to look at jobs, and with IMB, it does this incredible process where you go through a selection. You don't just show up and they assign you a country.
You just
go through this whole process. So we went through this whole process of selecting, and God, well, Hannah, you say like God.
It was like Portugal, just God highlighted it on a map, and that was where we were going. We'd never been there. We hadn't actually really been to Southern Europe at all at that point, but it was just extremely clear. It was like you look at a map and Portugal just jumped out, and it's this tiny little country. It doesn't make sense. So we knew it was God really taking us there, and obviously 15 years later, we can look back and say it was definitely God leading us there.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But people always ask us that, like, why Portugal? How'd you end up here? And I'm like, there's really no answer other than that's where God wanted us and he directed us there.
And it's really funny because when people look at missions, they want like this definitive answer.
Right.
You kind of have to just trust God in that process.
Yeah.
That he's going to take you where he wants you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's okay. Like even me and Hannah, and we get this a lot as we're looking at new missionary candidates coming through the pipeline. You know, you see maybe a husband and a wife, and they have maybe two different ideas of what missions will look like. Hmm. I remember when we went through a process, I would have gone anywhere in the entire world mm-hmm. and been totally fine. And Hannah was like, no, I think we need to be looking at Europe. I mean, so there's this, there's this kind of like God working even in that
yeah.
to take us where we needed to be. And it's really great because, you know, during the process, you're kind of like, is this right? Is this right? Is this right? And it's only with time and seeing God's faithfulness that you look back and you go, okay, yeah, it was
time
right.
on the field.
Yeah. It was right. Yeah. God doesn't make mistakes.
Right.
He put us right where he wanted
yeah.
us.
Yeah. Now I'm interested to have your answers on this next question because you both have such extensive overseas experiences growing up. What was your first big culture shock moment?
In Portugal?
Yeah. Or if there's another one in your life that just hits you, like maybe it was even coming, I don't know. I mean, wherever it could have been. Yeah.
You know, because we've lived overseas so long, the culture shock we get now is coming back to the States.
That's kind of what I was wondering if it was going to be. Yeah. It was coming back to the States. So that, and that still happening.
Oh, like, that still happens.
Yeah. I think probably the South, being in Tennessee, was the biggest culture shock I really honestly that I've ever felt. Because, you know, as a kid, there were things coming back from, you know, growing up in Africa. My cousins could probably tell it better than us because they loved to like meet us at the plane and take us shopping because it was always we just would kind of freak out at the cereal aisle.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger moment for me that I remember most distinctly was being in Tennessee and everyone thought that we should understand the culture. We looked right. We looked American. We looked should fit in. But the South has such a high formal culture that we didn't grow up with that. I don't know the rules. And so I would show up at every event dressed wrong with the wrong thing, with the wrong kids in tow. You know, like I finally learned and I probably used this overseas too. I learned I had a friend who was from there and I would call her before anything and say, help me with the dress code. Help me with what to bring. Help, you know, when do you show up? When do you leave? Because there's all these rules that are unspoken. Yeah. So I I took a cultural buddy from the South to help me navigate living there.
And you know, that's funny because that's like missions 101, because when you go overseas, you have to find an insider that can help you navigate that culture.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And so it can be very daunting, but that's the same thing we did. I think maybe that's why our overseas experience wasn't such a shock. Now I would talk about culture stress. Mm-hmm. As a bigger issue to missionaries than culture shock. Now, culture shock, some people get hit pretty hard. And, you know, you hear the stories of, you know, a couple that, you know, went to Africa and 2 weeks later they're on a plane back to the U.S.
Sure, yeah.
Culture shock hit them pretty hard. It's actually culture stress that really is the silent killer.
Meaning like the same type of thing, but over a long period of time.
Yeah, like culture shock, you kind of can identify easily. Like, you know it, you see it. You're like, I don't know what to do with this piece of the culture that just doesn't make sense in my mind. And a lot of times you can laugh it off.
Yeah.
A lot of times you can identify it and kind of laugh it off. Whereas culture stress, you don't realize that it's building. And, you know, there's just things that are difficult or, you know,
here's a good example.
I was trying to think. Maybe you can't find an ingredient for a meal that you're really missing and wanting to make. And, you know, you don't laugh about that. You don't really think about it. You just try to find a substitute or go on. But those kind of things just build over time.
Yeah.
And you just begin to feel that pressure. You begin to feel that missing of home and, you know, that wanting of that comfort. And you can't quite identify it as easily as like a glaring culture shock moment.
So I'll give you a great example of that. So, you know, we've been in Portugal 15 years. And so over those 15 years, we've had highs and lows and really incredible ministry times and really difficult challenge, like soul searching moments, all everything that ministry is.
Yeah.
Whether you're in Portugal or Southern California, right? And one of the things that hits you, though, is this loss of identity when you go. And although you recapture that, you find your niche, you find your place, you find your role, it still isn't the same. And so we would joke with our Portuguese friends, and this is after a lot of years of being there, like I preach fluently in Portuguese and Hannah speaks at women's events and I mean, we're fluent Portuguese speakers. But we joke with our friends that we say, we actually are really intelligent people in English.
Right.
You know, because you're always fighting to find that right word, to say the phrase right, to have it come off like a local would or like a Portuguese person.
Yeah.
And so there's that struggle. And so just recently, our youngest just started at Cal Baptist. She's a freshman and she needed some help with some homework. And typically for 15 years, we haven't been able to help our kids with homework in Portuguese school.
Sure, right.
Because
right.
it gets way beyond our capabilities really quickly.
Yeah.
And so we helped her and such, and she kind of turned to us and she goes, "You guys are really smart." And I thought, for 15 years, my daughter has been thinking that we're not super smart because you're always muted.
Yeah, yeah.
You're always working in that second language.
Yeah.
Fighting, trying. So that stress over the years builds up.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be challenging.
I'm sure, yeah. How do people deal with that?
I think there's a lot of different ways to deal with it. And it does depend on personality and what's most important to you, and even in identity, what parts of your identity are most important. And so I think you need to be in a healthy church, you know, even in a second language, you need the support of a church. You need to be building those relationships and letting people get to know you so that you can begin to show a little bit more of yourself. You have to do language. You have to work hard on language, because if you never get even to an acceptable level of language, you're just always going to feel like you can't even communicate, you know, basic needs to other people. And then I think like vacations and our meetings that we do where we're with other missionaries and we have time to kind of debrief those things are some of those, you know, maybe once a year kind of things that really are super important, because it gives you kind of a relief from that. It gives you kind of a chance to be with other people who are in the same boat as you, and you can share ideas and share different, you know, creative ways that people have gotten around that, you know, hobbies and different stuff like that become really important, because you just need that time to be able to express yourself in a way that feels comfortable, that feels more natural to you. And also just time to get comfortable with a new normal.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, we want comfort so badly. And so we fight that and we'll kind of run away from that. And I think leaning into it and finding a new normal and being okay with that is really important too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've really learned to lean into discomfort over the years.
Mm.
And that's hard, because like, I think our tendency is to want to find those places of comfort.
Sure.
And just to operate out of that where we feel good about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, 15 years on the field has just taught us like, keep leaning into discomfort and be okay with it.
Yeah.
Like God works in the discomfort.
Yeah. With that in mind, what is like day-to-day preparation for your mission work like? The small things.
Like the daily work of being a missionary?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we can't get very far without talking about a vibrant relationship with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That's a constant. I've said over the years that missionaries tend to be, and Hannah mentioned this, so I want to jump on this. Missionaries tend to be the largest group of pastorless people in the world.
Mm.
And so because they're sent out to be missionaries, to start the work, to start churches, they tend to operate on the very fringe of everything. And so sometimes they can get into really unhealthy patterns of relating to local church.
Right.
And I don't want to go too far on this, because I know we have colleagues that work in really hard places.
Of course, yeah.
Where maybe the church isn't very strong, or maybe doesn't even exist at that point.
Yeah.
And so I want to be very careful with that. But I do want to say one thing that we've learned over the years is that vibrant relationship with Christ is key, but it needs to be worked out in his word and through his community of faith, regardless of where you are in the world.
Right, right.
Because when we read the New Testament, there's no option for the quote-unquote missionary that's not connected to the local church.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we think, well, my local church is 10,000 miles away back in, you know, Tennessee or Washington State or Texas. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
We need to be in community.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that has sustained us daily, is that relationship with our local church that is growing and investing in us. Mm. And I say that as the missionary.
Right.
So here we are sent out to be the missionaries to the local church to help, hey, you need to do this. You need to plant new churches. You need to do this. You need to reach these people. And I'm talking about being ministered to by the local church so that we can do the daily task of being a missionary.
Right.
It's kind of a hard question to answer practically, because it depends so much on like what season of life you're in and what ministry is happening around you and all of those things. And so, you know, there were seasons for many years where our girls were small and in school. And so, you know, practically it meant getting them ready for school, right, getting lunches packed, getting them going, you know, scheduling the appointments between mm-hmm. drop off and pick up and, you know, those kind of things. We're in a different season now. Our youngest just started at Cal Baptist. And so, you know, we've had more teenagers in the more recent years and they're more independent. And so there's still that element of getting them ready and going. We're also at a healthier church now. And so there's the elements of the church activities and preparing for those. And like I help we lead the women's study. So part of it is, you know, preparation for that. And then there's the other side of it that's like trying to find new and creative ways to meet different people or to continue reaching out to our lost friends, you know, finding ways to I was talking about this with some of the ladies here just the other day, just finding relational ways to just continue to engage people that aren't going to just show up at church, you know, finding ways to be in the community, to continue relationships with people that that don't have a relationship with God. And so that I feel like, honestly, for us, it felt like every day was different because we were always we were balancing between kids and local ministry within the church and trying to constantly remember to be out there, you know, meeting new people and, and finding new ways to engage lost people.
Yeah.
That is the fun thing about being a missionary, though, is it's not very static.
Yeah.
So you do have some things that are on the schedule that kind of repeat, but then every day is different. And so there's some patterns that, you know, that are good, like, you know, meeting people for a cafe. And that's, you know, Southern European culture is amazing. You know, you can go meet for a cafe and spend 2 hours just talking with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we get back here and that's culture shock for us is everybody's on the clock.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
there's like, no cafes. They close at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. In fact, we tried to go to a coffee shop the other day and we got there at 5:05.
And it was done.
It was done. And I was like, where do people go?
This is the time when you meet people.
They're all morning based.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. They all open at 5 a.m. So people come in and get their coffee before work. But I mean, you do see people hanging out in coffee shops. Like there's some culture around that, but it's not that.
It's not the lazy Southern afternoon. Your friends for a drink
well,
and just
mostly
hang
people
out
online.
Yeah.
In Southern Europe. Yeah. So 5 o'clock is like afternoon snack.
Yeah.
Mm. And then, you know, you're kind of getting off work, hanging out with people, whatever. And then dinner is usually like, you know, 8 or 9
p.m.
It's late. Spain's even later. Spain sometimes
so
is
like
10.
That, like 4 to 6 o'clock hour is like prime meeting time, prime hangout time, prime friend time.
Yeah.
So we're definitely adjusting to that. Like we haven't like for us, that's when you would meet people and here everyone's like, oh, no, that hour is like not a chance
so
that we can meet during that time.
You're telling me we have to get up early in this culture. That's what we have to do.
Yeah. People do early. And I think here, I mean, like you're saying 5 to 6. We all know what 5 to 6 is here. That's like the worst part of the day because you have to be on a highway.
Right.
It's going to take you forever. Like, I mean, that's true in a lot of places, but of course, Southern California, it's particularly.
Yeah.
Particularly built into, it's a cultural thing, I think, actually. Yeah. I mean, we're talking before we started recording about how long podcasts have gotten.
Yeah.
But I think, like, out here, what else are you going to do?
You can listen to 2.5-hour podcasts.
You can listen when you're driving. Yeah.
You want to find a podcast that's going to last your whole drive so you don't have to look for another one. Yeah.
But that's also kind of an isolating thing.
That's true.
Most people here also drive alone. Almost every car you see, it's just a very different mindset.
That's the fascinating thing coming from Europe to back to the States and Southern California in particular is that we use a lot of public transportation.
Right.
And so even though let's say you might have people on the bus or the subway or the metro, they might have earbuds in, but there's still that constant interaction.
Yeah.
Cause you're sitting next to somebody or you're bumping into people. Mm-hmm. And so it's not quite as isolating as you feel here when you're in traffic and you just look down the freeway and there's
you're always with people. You don't get in your car and like drive out of your driveway and drive, you know, isolated. You go out, you wait at the bus stop with people. If anything happens, everyone's going to be talking together about it. You get off and walk with people places. You're just constantly with people. Yeah. So it is very isolating here.
I think out here it's even to the point of what I've noticed is people don't seem angry when they're driving. They drive fast in Southern California, but no one is like getting like, you know, I don't know. if someone like cuts you off or you cut someone off, you never get like that look from them of like hatred or like they're not going to cuss you out or something. Like people are just kind of doing, because I think they're still, even then, they really aren't relating to the other people in other cars. You're just trying to get there. We all know we're in the same terrible situation. Yeah. We're just trying to get there. We all know we're going to be a little late. And so people aren't angry, but I think there's that's evidence of some of that isolation because there's like no emotional reaction to anything going on.
No connection
around
to anyone.
You know? Yeah, you're really just living in your own world. In your car. And that's hours a day for people.
Yeah. And the Portuguese are very angry drivers. They're the opposite. They are extremely, like, well, Portuguese are the nicest people in the world. And like, it's well known that when they get behind the wheel of a car, they turn into a different person.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it is part of that communal thing. Yeah. Like you're constantly relating to everyone around you.
Honking your horn in Mississippi is one of the worst things you can
do. Oh, really?
It is like, it enrages people because it's like, it's like flipping someone off, I think.
Wow.
It is just like, if you have honked your horn, like I've publicly shamed your driving or something like that. It feels like that.
It's very personal.
It's not like that here at all. It's just a different thing. You know?
Southern Europe, I had to learn
how
to.
And we don't think anyone honks here.
Like, right,
no one ever honks here.
No, you don't get it very often,
No, Southern Europe, it's like constant.
Southern Europe, You use your horn for friendly notices, for mean notices, for, there's different, like, lengths of how long you honk it for how angry you want to show you are.
One of my favorite things in Portugal and Lisbon, it's a big city, and so, you know, parking's a little tight. It's hard to find parking. And so what people will do is they'll kind of, like, what do they call it, double parking? What do we call that?
Yeah,
so, like, you know, you put your car in front of
like
some
behind
parked cars.
Other
oh,
cars.
Sure. Yeah.
Like you're blocking people.
You're blocking. And so they'll just park the car there and go about their business.
You throw on your hazards. You throw on your hazards. It's fair game.
Yeah.
So, but nobody cares because if somebody wants to get out and they're being blocked, they just lay on the horn. They just hold it down until the person comes out.
I've blocked somebody.
Right. Yeah. And so you're just letting them know. Nobody's angry. It's just, hey, by the way, I need to get out.
And usually you'll do that if you're like running into the cafe. So you're there nearby. Yeah, you're so going to, you know, when someone's going to honk the horn, you hear it, you run out, you wave at them, you move your car. It's not a big deal.
And then you get his spot, right? You get
that spot. And then the spot opens up.
You've been waiting. Oh, that's smart.
I'm not going to do that here.
No, I wouldn't try
that.
No, yeah, I wouldn't try that, especially not in Mississippi, I wouldn't try it here either. What would you say is a good matchup in your job between like your spiritual giftings and like the work you do? Like how has that worked out in your missionary work?
Well, yeah, and that is a long road that has been worked out by God's grace because there's so much that does match up. And there's so much that you have to learn, almost unlearn and then relearn. And so, you know, Hannah's a great example. Her background's in social work. And there's a pretty good match because a lot of what we're doing is meeting people, meeting their needs, working with them, figuring out those next steps, how to help people grow, not only in a relationship with Christ, but then walking towards Christ, walking towards the cross, helping them figure out what those next steps are.
Yeah, sure.
Because we deal with a huge population that's unreached. And so you're always kind of trying to help people walk towards what faith looks like. My background, you know, I was in the military, civil engineer. And you go, wow, that's not a one-to-one match. But, you know, there's a lot that I learned in the military that's helped me over the years. Just, you know, the discipline. One of the things I always say that helped me with the mission work is in the military, I learned that there's no problem that's too big and that the way that you tackle a huge problem is you just start working on a lot of smaller problems that will get you towards that.
Yeah.
And church planting is a lot like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a weird job. I mean, they throw you in the middle of a new country with a new language and maybe you had a lot of credentials in America in your English speaking world, but then all of a sudden you're a nobody.
Yeah.
And so you've got to relearn all that. You've got to get back up to where you can be actually contributing and helping and figuring that out, right? And so I think just that tenacity, just to keep pushing forward, has served me well in church planting.
Yeah.
Just because we're in a place where things don't happen easily. And so you're always, now granted, you have to always couch that in like dependency on God, the results being what God is doing. You know, we can't force anything to happen.
Yeah.
And so we move into the spiritual realm, you go, all the tenacity in the world is not going to make God do something he's not going to do. So he's going to continue to. And so it's a spiritual thing. And so we have to be able to say, okay, God, I'm going to work as hard as I can, but it needs to be done in dependence on you, in your spirit, by your word, in your community of faith. You know, those kind of things that help us to continue to use the gifts and talents in a way that serves God and his church.
Yeah, I've been on a little bit of an interesting journey with gifting and even just gifting where I'm comfortable and gifting where I think God gave me some gifting during a season that was needed to serve the church, but it wasn't my normal gifting. So several years ago, the pastor's wife invited me to join her in the women's ministry and to work on that. And I do not have the spiritual gift of teaching at all. But it was needed. We really, really wanted to start a weekly Bible study and to really go deep with that and to really create. And we translated Bible studies and we wrote some of our own. We really, really developed that. That is so far out of my natural gifting. Mm. That's so far out of my spiritual gifting. That's not what I've ever done anywhere else or enjoyed or been able to do. And for a pretty long season, God really gifted me to do that. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I was able to do it. I was able to do it in a second language. Mm-hmm. And then over the last year, I started noticing that it was like I was functioning out of my gifting again. It was like it just took so much work and energy.
Right.
And I just so would rather kind of sit behind someone else and help them do it than do it myself. And so I worked through that with the ladies, with the other leaders that I work with. And I just said, I think at the time, at the beginning, there was no one else. And so God allowed me to have that gifting during that time. But as other leaders have been trained up and they're national leaders, they're obviously going to speak better than me. They're obviously going to just in every way be a better fit for that than me, that God kind of took that gifting away.
Right.
And so that's been a really interesting journey. It was really just this last year working through that and just really, I was very thankful that God allowed me to do that during that time. I loved it during that time, but it was also a fun journey to walk through with the ladies of just realizing that time had come to an end and even that gifting had kind of ended and just accepting that and being thankful for that and really then kind of reminding myself again, like, what is the gifting that God has given me and how do I function more in that and allow the ladies that are gifted in teaching to do the teaching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you guys tell me a swing and a miss you've had on the field?
Oh man. lots of misses.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is interesting because the 15 years has been marked by all of that. Swings, misses, highs, lows. It's just ministry. And so when we first got there, we were pretty excited. And that's usually what happens when missionaries show up to the field. They're pretty excitable. They've got a lot of energy and excitement to do the work. And then they just usually hit a wall, especially in Europe. They hit a wall and because the work does not correspond with their expectations.
Okay.
And then there, you know, you got to remember, like, you know, they were sent over to do this work. There's churches, 47,000 Southern Baptist churches that are supporting this work.
Right.
And you're like, man, we gotta show something, right? We gotta do something.
Yeah.
And so there's that initial disappointment and kind of working through that. And so for us, that looked like, I think doing really well with language and culture and then going, okay, what do we need to be doing? And so we did join a church plant. So our first term, we helped a church plant and it was good. Learned a lot of really what not to do in those first years. But then we realized like, hey, this church plant's going and you know, it was kind of like a multinational group leading this. And we thought we need to, when we come back from our first stateside, our first furlough, we need to start something in our neighborhood and in a church. And so initially we got back and we thought it was good. We had a lot of friends in the neighborhood. Our kids went to Portuguese school. Mm. And so initially it went really well. We would have like Bible studies and, you know, I don't know, 30 people, 35 people would show up and they'd stay till 1 a.m. talking about the Bible.
Wow.
And we were like, man, this is amazing. It's like straight out of the pages of the New Testament,
yeah.
Right? We do a gathering, like an event, and we'd have 70, 80 people show up. These are all lost people.
Yeah.
So we thought, man, this is incredible. Like it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
And so the further we got into it and the further we would get deeper into the gospel and what this meant and really communicate, hey, we're looking to form a church. This is, we want to start this. It just blew up. It just imploded.
Hmm.
And the reason is because you can't plant a church with lost people.
Yeah.
You have to have people come to faith.
Right.
And so for whatever reason, God did not allow that to happen. Mm. And time again, people came to us and they said, it's too high of a cost. We know what you're saying, but we just can't commit to that.
Wow.
And they said, we had a good friend that said to us, I'd rather come home from work and on Friday and just kick off my shoes and sit on the couch and watch TV.
Yeah.
What you're saying is too much.
Yeah.
And so it really just imploded. And we went through this period of just soul searching because we were like, God, what? Like, we're doing everything right. We're doing exactly what they taught us to do.
Yeah.
Like, we're good missionaries, right? So why isn't this working? A lot of frustration. And it wasn't until when we had been developing this relationship with our strongest partner that we have now, Tiago. And Tiago, at that moment, when I'm at my lowest, like just complete in the basement at my lowest in ministry, he came up to me and goes, I'm so glad that you failed. I think I can work with you now. And I said, dude, you've got to unpack that for me because like way to kick a guy when he's down.
Yeah.
Right. And so Tiago said, well, let me explain something to you, Mark. He goes, if you Americans can come over and you can snap your fingers and plant a church, what does God need us for? Mm. What does God need the local church for?
Yeah.
And that started a process of going so deep with a local church and planting multiple churches over years that I think absolutely changed our vision and understanding of ministry and missions.
Yeah.
Because God allowed us, in his grace and his mercy, he allowed us to see failure, not because we were necessarily doing things wrong, but because he wanted something better.
Yeah.
He wanted this church planting to be done in the context of the local church.
Yeah.
Not by a mission organization, not by these rock star missionaries,
right,
not by these Americans that show up and can kind of put things together because they're just so good at what they do.
Yeah.
It's not about methodology. And God had to remind me, it's about this relationship that I am cultivating and seeing worked out over time.
Yeah.
And so the win, the high ends up being what God led us to, which was deep-seated partnership.
Yeah, with the local church.
With a local church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And years of ministry that came out of that. Now, really, I mean, we have stories of the hardships of ministry.
Sure, yeah.
But just a joy of walking alongside local Portuguese believers and us going together into missions and ministry and saying, okay, where does the gospel need to go today?
Mm.
And what are we going to do about it?
Right.
Uh-huh. Would you have other ones, Hannah?
I mean, I think everyone wants a language one, right? Because that's always entertaining.
I'm sure that's
you know, just to lighten it up a little bit.
Just don't drag me into this.
Well, I'm sure I have some, but Mark's were the most spectacular.
That was terrible.
So we're brand new. We're learning the language. We're visiting different churches, you know, trying to find a place to go. And our language school was very formal. So they taught us this very formal way to introduce ourselves. And so Mark's super proud. You know, he's really thinks he's got it down. So we're going to these churches and he's, you know, using this very formal way to introduce us.
And the pastor asked you to stand up. So, you know,
always, because it's these little bitty churches, you know. And every time he does, so he introduces the whole family, you know, introduces me. And it's always this like weird reaction. Like people kind of backed away. Like they just didn't. And you know, it was obvious something wasn't quite right. Yeah. And we're like, oh, our accents aren't, you know, but as a couple of times, you know, it happens and we're like, something's not right. So we go back to our language teacher and Mark's like, I'm not doing something right. I'm not, the response is odd. Like what's going on? He's like, okay, just pretend you're, you know, introducing your wife and, you know, do the whole thing. So Mark does it and he literally falls on the ground laughing. He's like, you never did that. Mark's like, I've done it so many times now.
Yeah, like, and I was what? Like, I've done it in church. And this is a non-believer. Our language wasn't a believer. And he goes, you did it in a church?
He's like, no. So we're like, what? Why? What do we do? So instead of saying, I present to you my wife, which is a very formal way, he was saying, do you desire my wife? Yeah.
So I understood the context. A couple weeks later, we're driving down the road, and there's this big publicidad.
Advertisement for McDonald's.
For McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so there's a Big Mac.
Yeah.
So like, that's the right context.
So
do you
it's
desire
using the
this
word,
Big Mac?
Right. Right. So it's like this, huge on billboards. And he's like, oh, my gosh. So
How many times did I literally say to a church, do you desire my wife, Hannah? And the church is like, I don't know what to do.
People just like back up. Like, I don't want to answer that question.
Constant. But so that's you know, the low of language. And it's funny because we can laugh at ourselves now, yeah. You know, and that's part of the language learning process. But yeah. I want to brag on Hannah for a little bit because those are the lows. And typically it was me that did the lows, right?
Yeah. He just took the most spectacular of the lows.
Right. But then the payoff is like, years later, I don't know, when was the first Saint-Médu that you guys did,
like
the women?
2016 or
something. Yeah, maybe 2016. So Hannah started with Anahut and just a small group of women that just wanted to do Bible studies and just help women learn how to study the Bible. And then over the years, this just blooms into this like national ministry. Hmm. You have churches saying, hey, we want this. Can you come train us? Can you help us? And so this morphs into this national women's conference. And so the first conference, I've got a picture of it. It's one of my favorite pictures. There's Hannah at the front, over 400 women, Portuguese women from all over the entire country. And she gives a, I think, 60-minute speech. Wow. What was it? How long was it? Half an hour?
No. 40 minutes? The first one I did two workshops.
But okay, was the second one?
The second one, I got to introduce the Bible study that we had written on the Book of Ruth.
And so just like in Portuguese, just nailing
it. We being the women at the church.
Yeah. But you just like, wow. Like we showed up to this country stumbling, bumbling over words. And here we are, like God is so good to bring us to this place, not only just in ministry, but then also just being able to do this in a second language, to be able to do this fluently and so people can understand and comprehend, but then also just what God is doing to just reach people through our ministry. And it's not about us, but it's just incredible how God uses us in that process.
Yeah. What are you guys like reading right now? Do you read a lot in Portuguese?
Well, I mean, I kind of have to. I preach a lot in Portuguese. Yeah. And so there's a lot that I have to read and, you know, staying up. I love reading newspaper stuff. So, I just love keeping up with the news in Portuguese and such. So, there's that. The funny thing about, Hannah mentioned this very early on in the podcast, Portugal tends to be resource poor, especially if you're talking about the Christian world. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. It's really hard to get good resources in Portuguese.
Yeah, sure.
Most of our resources are translated.
Yeah.
So we would read them in English unless I'm reading them. Sometimes like in the summers, we do book studies with the women. So I'll actually read both. I'll do English and Portuguese so that I understand the original language it was written in and I can use the same words as the ladies are reading.
Yeah.
But we are very resource poor. Our pastor writes books. So those would be in original language, and we get some books from Brazil. So those would be closer.
Yeah.
But other than that, most everything else is translated.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a lot of over the last couple of years, we've really been trying to work with leadership to talk about how can we continue to resource Portuguese people, not only Christians and churches, but then also good resources that would be gospel centered to reach people, this huge population, you know, 99% that are unreached. Yeah. And continue to do that as a ministry of what this looks like for this next generation. So, so we're kind of all about that. But just as far as like reading.
What are we reading?
Yeah, go ahead.
I am rereading actually a Hannah Anderson book called Humble Roots. I love anything written by Hannah Anderson.
Yeah.
She's one of my favorite authors. And so I've been actually recently going back, and it's been a little while since I read all of them. So right now I'm rereading. I think it's one of her first ones. It's called Humble Roots.
That's cool.
It's a really great book.
Yeah.
So this is a fun one. So I'm reading very, very slowly Revival and Revivalism by Murray.
Okay.
So Mark Dever showed up to Portugal earlier this spring. Hmm. We had a conference and kind of Nine Marks kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I was chatting with him just about missions, missiology, methodology. I was going to say, because you've got to read Revival and Revivalism. So Murray takes a look at the two great revivals in America.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And compares them.
Yeah.
And I think makes the point of like one being true revival and one being an attempt to copy it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's pretty fast. It's a slow read because it's dense.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm enjoying that. And, you know, other things as well. Mm-hmm. We like to read.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
We do.
Okay, my last question. If someone's listening to this and they want to get connected with you guys, support you guys, support work in Portugal, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, and as International Mission Board missionaries, the first and foremost way is just to connect with IMB and give through your local church to Laudimund.
Yeah.
And because that 100% of that goes directly to support the operations of our mission force all around the world.
Yeah.
And we're privileged to not only work with IMB, but we also have family that's worked for the IMB. So Hannah's parents retired after 34 years with the International Mission Board. She's got two sisters as well serving with the International Mission Board. And so we always want to continue just to support that through the local church. Beyond that, you can go to IMB/give and you can actually find our team.
Oh, wow.
And give to the projects. Like we have a leadership development project that we're working on right now to help train local guys to become pastors and church planners. And so we have that project that's through the IMB that local churches can give to help us accomplish that on our team, the Lisbon, Portugal team.
Yeah. And you can, of course, pray.
Yeah.
Always be praying for missions in particular when you hear about a place. If you know a local missionary, I think, you know, every missionary wants to share their story and give you specific things to pray for. So, you know, if you're here at Gateway and want to know more about Portugal, we'd be happy to give you more specific ways to pray for Portugal specifically. But I think a lot of people know different missionaries, and I'm sure they'd love to give you a list of personal prayer requests to pray for themselves, their family, their ministry, their country. So I know we kind of always add that as an add-on, but it's such a big deal. Missionaries really need your prayer, and they love to know you're praying for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's perfect. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.